Hello and welcome to the Performance Podcast for Monday the 23rd of April. And joining me on this edition, Steve Withers.
Sloppy seconds ain't my style.
Mark Hodgkinson.
I ain't no stranger to heartbreak. Or is it heartache? One of them. You're just for memory, aren't you?
And Ed Selly.
That's my name, don't wear it out.
Right, so Ed's finally got something mounted on his wall, his TV.
Yes. It took a while, but a man eventually came round, relocated the bracket. It's all... Do you know what? It's not quite as ridiculous on the wall as I feared it might be. So there is that, you know.
It's a beauty with OLED that it's so thin and light that, you know, it's not... As long as he's, you know, he has used some robots...
It's all properly done. It's more. It weighs less than, as you say, it weighs less than the GT60. It's more obviously going from 42 to 55. It's a reasonable increase in real estate, and yeah. I was a bit worried it was going to be preposterous. As it is, it's merely a bit chavvy. So you know, we'll,
give it next week, and you'll be thinking, should have bought the 65 inch.
Yeah. No, I don't think that's a sane and sensible position. So yeah, we'll see where we go from there. But it's a telly. It does a job. My HD channels now look like crap. My SD channels are unwatchable. And, you know, it appears to be par for the course. We've got all this all singing, all dancing technology and bugger all to watch with it.
There's no excuse for watching standard definition, surely, now.
Yeah, absolutely.
No.
Well, I can't. It's just unwatchable, to be honest, these days. It's just, particularly the larger the screen, the less. I mean, it's just.
Yeah.
It's not good, unfortunately. But that once upon a time, that was the state of the art. You used to watch that on a big projector screen.
yeah, but then the projectors were, you know, 576i or 720 at max back then.
Yeah, I mean it's you know, they're trying to make a silk purse out of a tiny, tiny sow's ear. I don't begrudge it that. As I say, it's more a bemoaning that even if I switch to Sky Q, which is emphatically not happening right now, it's still not a huge amount of actual native 4K content to watch on it.
No, you'll have to get yourself either an Xbox. 1X, like I have, and die within 2 minutes of starting any game. But but it's great. It's a great upscaler, and I've put my cable box through it and all sorts in it. It's fantastic. And you can get your Netflix 4K and that kind of thing from there. You've also got your built-in apps on the TV anyway, Ed.
Yeah,
Netflix
true.
And that kind
that's
of thing.
Fine.
So you'll get HDR material and 4K material and so on. Interestingly, I had a delivery this week of a TV from a company that I'd never heard of. And it's an OLED TV. It's made with an LG panel. I haven't switched it on yet. I haven't packed it, which was a chore. There was no way this screen was getting smashed. The amount of packaging that was on it, I was beginning to worry that it was actually a 65-inch screen when it turned up. It's not. It's a 55-inch screen. It's just really well packaged and all sorts. So it'll be interesting to see, because this TV is like £800.
Does that mean we run a news story on that was sub 1,000? Is it that same one?
Yeah, I think so. You might have run it at the end of last year.
Electric or something? Is
it electric with a
Q.
A Q instead of a C. So it's the electric 55-inch OLED TV. It uses an LG panel. It's going to be interesting to see just how well it performs, because it's one of these brands that they say they're going for quality, but without the brand costs behind it. So it'll be interesting to see. So you're enjoying your OLED, Ed?
It's fine. I can't get that excited about televisions. It's and under normal circumstances, I mean, if I was replacing at the same time I'd be doing when I switched to HD, it would be when I could watch the better part of an evening's viewing in it, which I'm a very long way away from being able to do. But it's done. The only thing is that did annoy me. I don't know if Steve feels the same way. Once it had come out of the box, that packaging is essentially. You could reassemble it, but it without the incredibly tight ratchet straps put around it, it is broadly speaking useless. I mean, I was thinking about hanging on to it because for whatever outcomes of my existence at the moment, I will be moving house at some stage, and I thought about, you know, putting it into storage, but there's no point. It's bollocksed from the moment you take the telly out of it.
Absolutely, and this electric TV, it came, and the only thing holding the packaging together is the straps.
Yes.
So once you cut the straps, there's now nothing holding that packaging together, and I have to repack this TV and send it back. So I'm looking at Amazon at the minute at the strap machine. It's 200 odd quid for a strapping machine. So I'll tape it up.
How much for a 200 meter reel of bubble wrap?
Exactly.
Yeah, well, it could do that, or I've actually found strapping that you used for putting stuff on your caravans and that kind of thing. It's like a material.
Yeah, so. Webbing.
So I'll probably use that to send it back in. But it's pack once and unpack once, and that's
so
it,
I've dispensed basically with the box, and I shall deal with the issues of moving it probably by panicking and flailing
around
in
the back of the car. That'll be all right.
Yeah, it'll be fine in the car.
Yeah,
put the seatbelt over it. Be fine.
I think it's wider than the rear seat of my car.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Doubt so.
Oh, I'll work it out. I will cross that bridge as and when I come to it.
As long as you don't lay it down flat, as long as you can stand it up, you should be fine. Don't ever lay things down flat. But what a fantastic weather we're having as well. I mean, sat in here, the sun is absolutely blazing outside. It was blazing yesterday. This is when I miss having a garden. I don't have a garden anymore. I've got a detached property. It's great. I can play as loud as I like, music-wise, in movies and all the rest of it. I've got nowhere to sit outside, though. And it kills me when it comes to this time of the year, especially when some inconsiderate person puts a photograph of their gin and tonic and the computer sat outside in the sun.
Steve. Yeah, a very pretentious nice photo, that.
Wasn't it? Wasn't it just
Mac and a pink gin?
Yeah,
that says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yeah, lifestyle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Hashtag lifestyle.
Took me an hour to pose that shot too.
Yeah.
Ooh, which Instagram filter am I going to use?
But yeah, get the cat in the background. Just out.
Oh yes, I did see tactical cat. So yeah.
Another thing I noticed while I was going around Twitter was, have you seen the new chocolate from Canada?
I have.
It's a new protein chocolate, and it's called Shite.
I don't think you're going to sell a huge amount of them in Scotland.
And the hashtag is Eat Shite. And this is real. If you want to see it, Mark, it's on my personal Facebook. You can go and click the link, because there is an actual website. It's an actual product. It is a protein chocolate, and it's spelled Shyte. And like I say, their hashtag is Eat Shite.
Yeah, they really did the market research after this country, didn't they?
Certainly not for Scotland. Yeah, they obviously didn't have anybody of Scottish descent.
Shite. Everyone says shite's a fairly regular term, even in the south.
Is it? I thought you were more posh.
Northerners say shite too.
Yes, we say shite.
All right. I thought you southerners said shit.
We don't say shit because that's far too rude.
We do use shit. We don't generally substitute the Y, in fairness. It's just shit with an E on the end of it.
Yeah, it's shit with an E on the end.
You know, that's a bit shaky.
Is there next advertising campaign?
Right, so who's going to buy some of this and try
it? I'm curious.
Is it for sale in the UK yet?
I don't know. It's priced in dollars. It's $10 a pack. But I mean, I've got a Canadian address I could get it forwarded to and then forwarded on to us. So.
For some chocolate.
For some shite.
For some poo.
So you can have orange and Madagascar vanilla, root beer and Madagascar vanilla, and caramel and sea salt.
Don't they do sort of a chocolate flavour one?
Yeah. So it's chocolate with a protein additive, basically, is that right?
It sounds ghastly.
It doesn't sound appetizing. I think I'll just have a cream egg or a cherry chocolate orange or something like that.
All right, so nobody's going to volunteer for this, because I could get some sent over.
Well, no, it's got to be you. You can have a small amount of shite, surely.
Yes, we will. I'll get some ordered. I'll speak to my cousin who lives over there. I'll get her to
just
send
a
stuff
wafer
over.
Thin piece of shite.
Yeah, I'll get.
You can't give unfortunate names. Does anyone remember? This might be my age, but does anyone remember that dietary dieting supplement called AIDS?
Yeah, that didn't last long, did it?
It after the mid-80s. Why? It was a diet supplement.
There's that Danish licorice sweet called Spunk, which is
that's not a sweet,
and they're actually sort of tadpole shaped as well, which is doubly unfortunate.
Bit salty, is it?
Apparently, it is. I've never had.
I wouldn't
Spunk.
Know, Phil. But...
Anyway, moving on swiftly.
Yeah, this has gone well off tangent. So anyway, Ed.
Yes.
Moving plasma to an OLED. What are your impressions?
Looks like a plasma, but more. You know that I don't get...
That should be the advertising campaign.
You're not going to get epiphanies from me on this. It looks great, but it's broadly speaking, it's like my GT60, but brighter and a bit more vivid. There's that same... Phil describes it better than me. There's that same reasonably natural sense to the picture that it's not sort of been, you know, it's not someone shining a torch through it. And that's fine. And the blacks are nice. So, yeah, it's fine. And the remote's cool. I do like that wandy thing. That's fun.
Yeah, that's very Very cool.
Yeah, and we're going to come on to it in a little bit, so we'll save it. But fantastic operating system on the LGs and stuff. So yeah, so that's what we've been getting up to. What have you been getting up to, Mark? Just so we can hear Hodgie's voice in this podcast.
I've spoken already. I've been taking lots of painkillers, Phil. not for recreation. Just because I am in pain, and I've been in pain all week. But yeah, I'm trying these things called COX-2 painkillers, and yeah, they're really good.
Okay.
That's about it. I've been surviving the Easter holidays and then just getting down to lots of work this week.
And I take it you can't have alcohol with that.
Oh, it's not stopped me.
Can you drink with painkillers?
You can drink with these ones, yeah, they're fine. They don't give you an upset tummy or anything. They're actually really, really good.
So some of the painkillers I've had in the past, you couldn't intake alcohol with them because they basically knock you out.
Sounds like a good reason to take alcohol with them.
Right, okay, so I think we're all up to date. We're going to hear what Steve's been getting up to because it's in the review section. So I just need somebody to do competition. So why don't you do that, Mark?
I will indeed. We have got quite a few on the go at the minute. You can win a copy of Pitch Perfect 3 on Blu-ray. My daughters say that's the best movie ever made. I'm not quite sure about that, but the competition closes on the 24th of April. We've also got a copy of Suicide Squad Hell to Pay on Blu-ray. That closes on the day after, on the 25th of April. The Philips 9002 OLED is still up for grabs, and that one closes on the 30th of April. We've also got a new entry. We've got the Arcam AVR 390 AV receiver. It's a very nice prize, which closes on the 30th of May, and that's it.
That's it.
That's your lot. I'll phrase it another way. All competitions open to eligible AV forums members resident in the UK.
Oh, well done.
Nicely done.
Excellent. And any previous competition winners?
No, not yet.
Okay, so that's competitions. That's what we've been up to. We'll be back in a sec with some hardware news. Okay, so hardware news. And I'm going to kick off this week. Not literally. I'm going to start.
It's all kicking off. You're a massive
Tiger. Oh, well. Going straight to DEFCON 1.
That was 13 minutes before the bleep machine had to come out this week. There we go.
Right. It was worth it though, wasn't it?
Right, so it's TV season and finally we've got some TVs through. So Steve's going to talk about a Samsung in a minute and give his first impressions on that. And I'll give you my initial thoughts on the Sony XF90. So it's a 55-inch version of this TV. It's got one major flaw. It runs Android.
And that applies to every Sony TV, so
yeah, that is a
it's
major
shit, isn't it?
It is a major issue. It's just so slow. As soon as you press a button and you're waiting seconds before it does anything, so that's a major flaw. I've also found that the tuner, and again, this is initial thoughts. I've only been using the TV for maybe a week now that it's been set up. I haven't had a chance to calibrate it yet. I'm going to do all that over this weekend coming in and the next few days and really test it. But I've just been using it as a normal TV. And like I say, Android is just so slow. It's so slow at doing anything. Netflix wouldn't load up initially. It wouldn't accept my password, even though the password was correct. The TV has crashed 2 times where I've had to physically remove the power from the wall.
Yeah.
And reboot it. And now that I've had it up and running a few days, it's a little bit quicker. But it's still, sometimes you'll press the button and it just seems like it's doing nothing. Also, I've noticed with BBC channels, and for some reason it's just the BBC channels on the UView built-in tuner, I get audio dropouts every 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds you get an audio dropout. And it doesn't last for long. It's just a pop, or the audio just quickly fades and comes back again. Does it every 30 seconds for some reason. So I'm not sure why it does
that. Is that the HD TV?
That's HD channels, yeah.
Is that because they're using HEAAC encoding? No one else does, I don't think.
It might be. I don't know.
TV speakers, is it?
Yeah, that's internal speakers, and that's using the internal tuner, the UV tuner. Because if I put my BT UV box through and watch the channels there, I don't get any audio dropouts or anything from it. Yeah. So for some reason, it's the built-in tuner that's doing that. So sorry, Sony, to start on a couple of negatives, but these are things that, having initially set the TV up, were blatantly obvious issues to me.
I find it really interesting, Phil, because obviously this is, I don't think you've had a Sony TV in for a couple of years.
Yeah.
Certainly not since they brought in Android.
I had one Android TV.
Right at the beginning, I think. Well, right, see, you know, yeah. 3 years ago when they started using Android, it was full of bugs and problems and kept dropping, you know, and crashing and everything. You think, well, okay, it's a new platform, they'll get better. They haven't got better. No. It's not
Android, the TV, that's the problem, because you can run Android TV perfectly well on low devices. It's just the crappy processor and the lack of RAM.
Well, which is entirely Sony's fault. Yeah. And if someone says to me, would you buy a Sony TV? My immediate answer is no, because of the Android smart platform operating system. I would not, as Mark just said, because they haven't got enough processing power to run it properly in their TVs, and it would totally put me off. Not performance-wise, but that aspect of it is just, and as you say, Phil, that's day-to-day use of a TV, right? I mean, you can say, well, you know, you've been watching it as a TV, you know, you can calibrate and stuff like that, but that's not what it's there for. It's there to watch things. In the experience of using that television is a pain in the ass.
It has been to start with. I mean, there are get-arounds. So if you're just going to send stuff to it through the HDMI inputs, like me, you've already got a BT UV box or whatever, you've got an Xbox, you've got a UHD Blu-ray player, they all have smart platforms on them, and you're going to use that, then that gets around the Androids. The only issue you then have is turning the power on and selecting the buttons and having to wait for your button pushing in for the TV to do something. But once you're then on an AV channel, that gets around all those issues. But a normal member of the public is not going to have all these inputs and use the smart stuff off. They're going to want to use the smart stuff that's built into the TV. And to be honest with you, it is a real chore with Android using any of the apps that are built in. And like I say, I've had issues with the audio and the built-in tuner as well. So it's
definitely more down to Sony's lack of processing power, as Mark said, because if you use a Philips TV, you've got a Philips TV, right, Mark?
Well, no, that's also shit as well. That's crap.
Is it just, I've always found the Philips hasn't been quite as shit as
Sony's. It's the same MediaTek piece of turd that's in the Philips. No, honestly, yeah, I use an Nvidia Shield TV, which is Android TV, and it's absolutely spot on. So, it's not the operating system, it's the processor.
Yeah, it's the lack of processing power.
However, having said all that, it uses a VA panel. It is a full array local dimming backlight on it, and it looks really, really nice. And the colour out of the box, it looks really nice in the Cinema Pro mode. The local dimming works really quite well, as long as you're sat head on with the TV and maybe out to, I don't know, 25, 30 degrees. It holds up really well without any obvious blooming around objects and so on. So from that point of view, I've been quite impressed with it. Again, motion is really nice on the Sony TVs.
Guys, my OLED is attracting bees. It's on at the moment because they're cycling, and I find it very restful. We've had this discussion before. But there are now two bees bouncing off the screen, which is a bit odd because the windows are open and the plants are on the outside, and I'm assuming it doesn't smell of pollen. So,
Well, whatever you do, don't kill them, please.
No, absolutely not. No, they're not doing me any harm. I just think they could spend their day more profitably than bouncing off the front of my television. I will probably try and shepherd them out if they're still going at it by the end of the podcast. So, you know, we'll see where we go from there.
Okay, so obviously Sony, really nice with the motion as well, and their motion flow system. As long as you stay away from smooth, and well, I think there's two smooth settings, smooth maximum and smooth light or whatever. As long as you stay away from those, because those do you add soap opera effect or SOE. Motion's really quite nice, and obviously you've got the True Cinema setting there, which they have in their projectors, and they also have in the TVs, which is, if you're watching 24 frames a second material, it's 5:5 pulled down, so it looks really nice. It just basically repeats the frames, but it does so in a way that, to the eye, it just looks a little bit smoother, and it evens out Telesign Jitter and Impulse. Now, interestingly, you've just told me about the backlight, black frame insertion, but it also manipulates the blacklight. And I was going to say, I did notice that it was, for BFI, it was really not noticeable.
Yeah, there wasn't a sudden dip in brightness.
No.
Yeah. Which I think is something that people have been talking about for a long time. The big problem with using black frame insertion is obviously you can always increase the backlight to adjust for that. But if you could do it automatically within the settings, so you didn't get this sudden drop in brightness, and you could still get the good blacks, boost the brighter parts of the image, and also improve the motion handling, then it's a win-win. And certainly the demos that I saw of it at CES, and also at Sony's thing in February, look really good. I've got to say, they looked very good.
Yeah, I've got to say, once you get over the niggles that, you know, with the operating system and so on, in terms of image quality, Sony have never been bad with image quality. They've always been really good. It shows you how confident they are with their color gamut settings, that they don't include a color management system in their menus, so you have no way of calibrating color.
Generally, though, you don't need to. It's
exactly, that's what I mean. They have confidence in their picture settings. They have confidence in the way they've set the TV up, that you don't need access to the CMS because it should be fairly accurate. And obviously, we'll test that out fully and see how that works. So, yeah, I don't like the long way around having to get into the picture menu. It's not quite as intuitive as other TVs. But yeah, using it as a normal TV, it's buggy if you're using the internal tuner and you're using the operating system. But in terms of picture quality, in terms of this full array local dimming backlight and the motion and so on, it looks really promising. I've played some games on it as well and died within 2 minutes. It's starting to get so I got an Xbox One X and it came with Far Cry 5, and that's easy enough. I haven't died in that yet, but I've only played about 4 minutes of that.
You say you've been playing it long enough then.
exactly.
The instructional section.
but once I got it, I thought, oh, I really want to try Star Wars Battlefront. So I found that really cheap online, so I bought a copy of that. And as the main game is loading, you can play the arcade style game. And yeah. I last maybe 3 minutes in that before I'm dead, and I get so frustrated, really frustrated. It's like, right, try and live a bit longer. And you can live a bit longer if you don't take part in the game, but what's the point? You've got to go and take part in the game. So in the end, I've ended up buying a cheap copy of Forza off Amazon because it's cars, and I should be all right at driving games. Everything else, I get
much
killed.
Should doing a lot of words.
It looks pretty amazing in HDR, doesn't it?
I've got to say, it's so far with the HDR stuff on this Sony, it handles it really nicely. I watched one episode of Lost in Space in HDR on it, and I've watched obviously a few other bits and pieces, and I've gamed a little bit. And I'd say in terms of how it handles HDR, it's really quite nice in terms of tone mapping. But it's not lift your frock up stuff. It's not amazing, if you know what I mean. So it's going to be interesting once I get some measurements and so on. I'm going to guess it's around 800 nits. If that, peak brightness, because it's not terribly bright in the highlights and so on. But having said that, it really has a really nice balanced HDR image, so it's tone mapping it nicely. And I've got to say, playing games and so on, the setup with games and so on is that it's so vivid and over the top in terms of colours and all the rest of it, that I'm struggling to notice any major boost. Maybe it's because I haven't been a gamer and I haven't played in SDR for a long time, but I've always found games which look pretty lurid when it comes to colours and brightness and so on anyway. So lots to do with that, lots to set up, lots to test and so on. But initially, disappointing out of the box in terms of UI, user interface, picture quality, looks pretty promising. And again, for a £1,600 TV, 55-inch, it's a little bit thicker than your normal LCD TVs, because obviously it's got that full array backlight, but it looks really promising. And in terms of picture quality, I have been quite impressed with it so far, so we'll see how we do over the weekend. But Steve, you've had the TV in as well, a little bit bigger, 65 inch one. It's a Samsung's Q9. So interestingly, we didn't get to see the Q9 last year.
No, we did not. For a number of reasons, I suspect, but let's be honest, last year was not a great year for Samsung at the high end of their range. They still had a cracking time in the mid-range, you know, that so the MU 7000, things like that, that sold like gangbusters. But the QLED range came under some criticism, and I think the big criticism really was that it used edge LED lighting, backlighting, and when it comes to HDR particularly, that is less than ideal. And the big deal about the Q, I mean, it's got the same name, so that's going to be confusing, but the Q9FN, which is how you denote this year's model, has a direct LED backlight, and that makes a massive difference. I've got to say that so far with this TV, I've got to say it's one of the best LCD TVs I've ever seen. I think they've really pulled out of the bag this time after last year. They've obviously taken the criticism, I think a lot of which was actually quite justified, to heart. They've decided what to do, and they've come back strong. And certainly as far as the flagship model goes, I think this is a quantum leap, pun intended, over last year's models that we saw. And I have seen the Q9 from last year, although we didn't review it. I saw it in other circumstances and was less than impressed. This time, though, really impressive. The it's a VA panel, of course. It's got a direct LED backlight. They won't officially confirm how many zones it has, but I counted. I tried to count them using that thing on YouTube, and I reckon it's just under 500 local dimming zones. But they also apply processing to the edges of zones where an object is crossing through two of the zones, so that it can sort of fine tune the edges of bright images against dark backgrounds. And the results are really impressive. Really deep blacks, but very almost no haloing, particularly if you're sat directly in front of the TV. Obviously, once you start to move off axis with a VA panel, you're going to see more haloing and a drop off in contrast performance. But from directly in front of the TV, really, really impressive. I've got to say that as a TV to watch and use, they've really delivered a cracking user experience, unlike the one you just describing, Phil. You can set the TV up off your mobile phone.
Yeah.
When you first get out of the box, it's really easy and straightforward. You just open the Smart Things app on your phone, takes you through the whole process. It tunes everything in the background. The tuner's all done in the background. There's a lot of processing power in this TV, which obviously is not the case on the Sony. The user interface itself, whilst reminiscent of WebOS, it is obviously Samsung's version, and they've fine-tuned it, and it works really well. It detects when you plug in a device, it detects it, it names it. So if you plug in, say, the PS4, for example, it detects it's a PS4, and it sets it all up for you. You set up the whole thing. It's got at the moment, it's got Netflix and Amazon. It doesn't have any of the UK catch-up services yet. I'm guessing they'll add it.
They will come, because I've just spent the last a year and a bit, probably 18 months, with the KS9500, which was their flagship TV from 2016. And I've got to say, everything you're saying there rings absolutely true. And this is why the Sony, when I first set up and started playing around with it and using the interface, probably felt even more buggy, was because I've used a Samsung for 2 years, and the UI on that is amazingly slick. The smart TV system is fantastic. The way you can dial up your apps and so on the screen and is absolutely spot on and intuitive. And it brings up, when you highlight something, it actually brings up thumbnails so you can see what's what and all the rest of it. And it does it so quick. And that's a TV from 2016. And comparing it to the 2018 Sony, a quantum leap, as you say, in terms of UI between the two. So I can only imagine that the Q9 is just as good when it comes to processing everything that's going on within the user interface.
Yeah, it's a great platform, really nice remote control. You do have voice control if you want to use it. I haven't got on that well with it, I have to say. I just try to find it's a lot quicker just to use the remote. Some really cool features, though. For example, when you do plug in a PS4, it detects it's a PS4, and it also detects it's a game console, and it knows that, so it goes straight into game mode for you. You don't even select it just does automatically. So as long as you just set your game mode up the way you want it set up, it will automatically do that for you when you're playing a game, and then when you go to another device, it will come out of game mode automatically as well, which is a really nice feature that I love. The One Connect box, which is a cracking idea that I really don't understand why no one else has ripped it off yet. I think it's great. You get the One Connect box, which is a lot bigger this year because it includes everything.
It's got power supply as well, hasn't it?
Yeah. Everything's in the One Connect box. So you put that to one side, you connect everything into that, and there's just this one thin cable that connects the TV. That's it. And that provides both the power and all the video feeds and everything.
Is that the see-through cable that we saw at CES?
Yeah, it's not. Yes, it is. Exactly. It's slightly bigger than the one from last year, because obviously they've got to run the power up through it now as well, but it's still a very thin, small cable. And that's the only thing going to the TV. So if you're wall mounting this TV, that's brilliant, because you can easily hide this one cable and it's going to look really nice. The design of the TV, I've got to say, I really like it. It's very reminiscent, I've got to say, of Sony's monolith design from a few years ago. It's basically a rectangular black slab. but I like that. And also it's a bit thicker because it's a direct LED backlight. But I think it's a nice design. It's very simple. It's very classic. But it appeals to my design sense. I like simplicity in a design. And this looks really good. So it looks gorgeous, but down when it's not on. You've got the ambient mode. So you can leave that on. And it shows you like the news or the weather and that sort of stuff in the background. If you don't want to leave it in standby. Nice little feature. So I think the overall package, I've got to say, as an overall package, I think it's a really impressive TV. It looks good. It's well designed. It's got an intuitive and clever user interface. It's got lots of nice little features that I think really add to the user experience. And in terms of picture quality, for SDR content, it looks stunning. And for HDR content, absolutely. I mean, I measured it at just under 2,000 nits.
Oof.
So this TV could deliver, you know, if you're looking at 1,000 nit content, that's just not tone mapping. It's just showing you the content as created. 100% of DCI-P3. And yeah, as an HDR experience, gaming, I was playing Horizon Zero Dawn, which looked absolutely stunning.
How long do you last in that before you get killed?
I haven't got to any killy bits yet because I'm still working my way through a lot of the training stuff.
Welcome to the AV Forum's gaming TV test.
The latest installment in old people gaming.
Yeah, our videos of the video review videos when it comes to the gaming bit, it's just going to be clips of us getting killed in different games. It's just going to be footage.
I think it's a cracking telly. They've really come back strong this year, which I'm glad to see. I think if you are particularly if you're a gamer, I think if you're a gamer and you're looking for a quality TV for gaming but also for watching TV and you want something that's going to deliver an all-round a quality all-round experience, then this definitely has to be something to consider.
I know it's
how
cheaper.
Well off a gamer do you need to be?
This is what I was going to come on to, because I know it's cheaper than last year's TV, Steve, but it's still, what, $3,799 for this one?
$3,499,
is it?
Yeah.
That is still a very large amount of money.
But there's a 65-inch flagship television, obviously. If you wanted direct LED backlight but wanted to spend less money, the XF90 you've been talking about is clearly a better bet in terms of bang for your buck. I think the 65-inch on that one is about $2,399, something around that, I think it was.
Yeah.
So it's a lot cheaper, grand cheaper, basically.
The thing is that a lot of our members, a lot of people that listen to this podcast, a lot of people that use AV forums, they want full array local dimming. If they can't go with an OLED, and some people are scared of OLED, especially gamers, because they think they're going to get image retention or burning, and it scares them off that, so they want to go to an LED LCD TVs. You can get full array local dimming this year, which last year you really couldn't get hold of. There is that, but still, $3,500 is still a lot of money to find for a TV.
We were paying that for 65-inch TVs last year as well, not whether it was OLED or LCD. I think I still think it's a comparable price for a 65-inch flagship television.
Yeah,
and you're getting the important thing is you're getting the performance that you would expect. You've got to have direct LED backlight for HDR particularly, and this certainly delivers in terms of performance, both with SDR and HDR. It's an impressive TV, I have to say, and I'm just glad to see that Samsung are back with a bang, and I've got a bit of swagger back.
I'm definitely, if they've got one available, I'm definitely going to look at the 55-inch Q9, because I really want to see it this year. It's really piqued my interest, and obviously you talking about it as well in the podcast. If one manufacturer can nail the HDR thing, then they're onto a winner, because as good as OLED is in terms of its infinite contrast and so on, it can only really do 800 to 1,000 nits.
And a full field frame, you're talking about 150, 200 nits.
Exactly. Whereas if it's HDR, if it's gaming and so on, this could be the TV. So I'm really interested in seeing that, and I'm enthused by what you're saying as well, because I think it could be an absolute cracker.
Yeah, and like you're saying, we tend to concentrate a lot on picture quality because of the nature of the audience of AV forums, but it's worth remembering that a TV is an overall experience. People, the picture quality is important, of course, but everything else, the user interface in particular, absolutely, is vital, because that's what you're doing day in, day out, is you're interacting with the television. And if it's not a pleasant user interface and user experience, then it's just off-putting, isn't it?
Yeah.
And my experience, and I've only got it on Monday night, so I've only had it this week, but has been nothing but a pleasure.
Which says a lot, because, my experiences with Sony, that's going to be replicated with end users as well when they get theirs out. And like I say, unless they're plugging everything into HDMI and just using the sources and not using anything built in. But if you're using the built-in stuff, it has to be tested. You have to live with it, which is another reason why we want to do what we're going to do this year in terms of long-term testing a lot of these TVs, a lot of the higher-end TVs, and just seeing what they are actually like to live with on a day-to-day basis and do some long-term testing with them and so on. And I think it really is important, especially if you're spending, like you say there, $3,500 for that TV. It's £1,600 for the Sony 55-inch. over $2,000 for the 65-inch. It's a lot of money to be spending. I mean, you want to make sure that you're getting your value for money, you're getting the picture quality, but you're also getting the user interface, and that the TVs are smart when they say they're smart. So yeah, it's been interesting. My first dipping my toe back in the water, Steve. It's been interesting so far. I'm looking forward to this year.
Well, it's exciting time, isn't it? Because there's so much happening, so much changing. New technologies being released all the time. After a prolonged period of relatively static technology in terms of TVs, the last 3 or 4 years have been quite seismic, and long may it continue because it gives us something to talk about.
Yeah, it does that. So let's have Ed talk about some stuff, and we'll talk about some old fashioned music.
Well, it's delivered in a new fashioned way.
Well, I was just about to say that, Ed. So Deezer is the latest service that we've tested in terms of streaming services. Tell us all about it.
Yes. This is an interesting one, as stated in the review, because Deezer has been around for 10 years, initially only in France, but it's gone global for a fair bit of that. And Deezer is the first service to start with a lossy offering and then add a lossless offering to it, which is called, imaginatively enough, Deezer Hi-Fi. And it's been an interesting one to test because it sort of demonstrates the limitations. There are limitations for services going in with a lossless offering in so much as it's like, oh, well, it costs this much and that's more than the others. Deezer has it a little bit differently. As stated in the review, I don't believe that sonically there's a huge amount between these services when dealing with listening to the same tracks at the same sample rate. You're more likely to determine significant differences when you're using different hardware with them. And as I've said, and it did cause some consternation, but I stand by it, if you've got a Cord Hugo 2 and, I don't know, a pair of Sennheiser IE800s, so, the best part of £3,000 worth of stuff, Spotify is still going to sound better than plugging a pair of £40 earphones directly into your laptop and listening to Qobuz Sublime. That's the nature of it. So Deezer doesn't sound significantly different to Tidal or Qobuz when all other things are equal. But the catch is that all things aren't equal, because whereas Tidal and Qobuz offer in their settings the ability to directly connect to a digital decoding device and lock out the rest of your computer's sound behavior, that's not really doable with Deezer at the moment. So if something comes in and on email or the like, or computer makes some other noise that just goes into your audio stream pretty much whether you like it or not, unless you turn everything else off. Now, if you're coming from Spotify or you're an existing Deezer customer and you're upgrading to Deezer Hi-Fi, that's going to be completely normal to you. But as a serious listening offering, that's more of a limitation. Equally, I like the app. It's sort of the desktop app and the web browser are nice, stable, easy to use. The mobile apps at the moment do not offer lossless, but that's coming. And they're nice, stable, and easy to use. It's a good service, and as I've noted in the conclusions, it just keeps the pressure up. It means that lossless streaming is becoming a normalized concept. It keeps the market honest, because it means that Tidal and Qobuz, they might have been eyeing up price rises, but they can't easily do that now because someone's come in and sort of fixed the £20 a month figure. Is there a compelling argument to change from Tidal or Qobuz to Deezer Hi-Fi? No, not as far as I'm concerned. If you are with a lossy service at the moment, it could well be worth a look, especially as they do seem to be putting a bit of a sprint on in terms of being supported internally by various other components. So that there are a number of embedded Deezer apps seemingly making it their way onto market, which is going to increase the chances of being able to simply just directly access it with a piece of equipment. So if those things fall in the right order, it's certainly a worthwhile thing to look at.
Speaking of operating systems, as we were with smart TVs, Ed, what's the best OS for all round for streaming services in terms of audio quality?
Do you know what? This is heavily dependent on the streaming service. In so much, I mean, Spotify is pretty much platform agnostic. They seem to have enough developers to ensure that everything is pretty much the same, whatever you happen to access it on. That's its sort of major joy. Apple Music, as you might expect, has a bit of a bias towards working best on iOS. I mean, they have got an Android app, and it's fine, but you can sense that it wasn't their immediate priority. Conversely, I would argue, in some regards, Tidal's Android offering has been better than their iOS offering for long periods of time. They seem to be happier developing an Android than they do the other way around. So there's no hard and fast. Deezer's is very, very similar across both iOS and Android, with the understanding that when I say I test it that way around, I test with Android on a phone, and admittedly a very grumpy phone, and iOS on an iPad. So you're not going to get exactly the same thing, but you can switch between them without having to relearn anything. The only thing I would say, with Android apps, as you know, if you've got a phone with an SD card plugged into it for extra memory, some apps allow you to install direct to the SD card to save space. Tidal allows you to do this, and it's a bit slower, but it still works. For the love of all things holy, don't install Deezer on the external card. It just doesn't work. Just will not work at all. So whether it's just requiring more processing cycles, I don't know, but it was unusable until I put it on the actual internal memory of the phone. But all you iOS types don't have to worry with such nuances as that, so you're all golden.
What about Windows?
I haven't noticed any. They're all pretty good on Windows. I would say I had Cobuz, because Cobuz has got more USB management options than the others. Cobuz can occasionally throw a bit of a wobbly if it decides that it doesn't like the ASIO connection that you've set up. But again, Mac users don't need to worry about that. And actually, the vast majority of PC users probably won't be going down that particular rabbit hole either. So that's where we stand at the moment. I mean, there's one or two other services that I'm looking at to do over the course of the year, and we'll see what happens from there.
Okay, so if you want to read more about Deezer and read Ed's review, it is on the homepage. It'll still be there when you listen to the podcast, unless you listen to the podcast in 2019, in which point it's well gone off the homepage. But if you're listening this week, it's still there. Go and have a read of that. And we'll be back in a sec with movie news. Okay, so movie news and reviews. Have we got any reviews this week, Steve? Did you go to the cinema?
I did not go to the cinema this week because there was nothing opening this week because of next week's cinema.
I've been catching up. So I've seen Black Panther this week, and I went back and saw Ready Player One again because both of those are going to disappear from the big screen, and I wanted to see Ready Player One for a second time. So I did pop in. I'm making full use of my Limitless card at the minute.
And what do you think of Black Panther?
For a Marvel superhero type movie, it had the same formula, but yeah, it was nice having a fresh sort of character, a fresh surroundings and so on, and I quite liked the premise, so I quite enjoyed it. But I didn't stay for the post credits, so I don't know what happened post credit.
I'll tell you off air. If you are, just so you know. Nothing major, don't worry.
Okay.
You're just setting up a couple of things for the next film.
Right. Well, I mean, the reason I went to see Black Panther is obviously Avengers Infinity War is out next week, and we're all booked up on the Thursday to go and see that, so we can talk about it on the podcast. So I saw from the trailers that he is quite a prominent character, so I thought, well, I better go and see Black Panther.
Not just him, but also Wakanda itself is quite a prominent.
Yeah,
the film.
It looks like it's going to be. So yeah, so that was another reason. So yes, I've used the Limitless card quite a bit this month. Rampage last week as well. So, and it's doing really well at the box office, which I'm not really that surprised about. I think people really like a big B movie monster type thing.
Yeah, I think Dwayne Johnson's box office record is pretty consistent. Obviously, he's had some massive hits with the Fast and Furious movies, but I don't think they're necessarily just him, although I think he is an important factor. His appearance in Fast 5 really changed that franchise. But his own movies, they tend to be made at a sensible budget level, so 100, 120 million, which is still a lot of money, but compared to some movies, it's relatively cheap. And they deliver a quality product, entertaining product, and they make money. He had a little bit of a blip last year with Baywatch, although I actually quite enjoyed it, although it didn't do as well at the box office. But generally, his films, they make money. And Rampage is another good example. It's come out. It was battling with A Quiet Place for number one spot, actually, in the States. A film that's done incredibly well off of a $17 million budget. I would expect it to do. He's got another film out later in the year called Skyscraper, where he's a one-legged security advisor who's basically trapped in a massive skyscraper in Hong Kong where it gets taken over by terrorists. So I'm really up for that one. That sounds like it should be great fun.
just repeat that.
He plays a one-legged security advisor. He's being interviewed at a giant skyscraper in Hong Kong, a newly opened skyscraper, to give them advice about security for the building. And they basically don't listen to him or poo-poo him. And then terrorists take over the building. And he has to battle his way out and save it.
So it's an inside job on his half to get myself a job, basically.
If you don't want to go and see it after that pitch, I don't know what will get you into the cinema, really, because that sounds great to me. So I saw a scene of him jumping from a crane, one-legged, don't forget. He's wearing a prosthetic. He didn't have his leg severed just for the role. He's not that method. I mean, he's just acting. Anyway, it looks like it's fun in the trailers, and I'm up for it.
Not sure I want security advice off a guy with one
plus,
leg.
Plus, we're watching
Graham Norton. He's obviously missed a mine somewhere or something.
We were watching Graham Norton last week, Laura and I, and The Rock was on it. I thought he was on good form. And Laura just looked at me and said, "You've got a massive man crush on him, haven't you?" And I said, "Yep." I have indeed.
Well documented.
Yes, it's well documented.
Yeah, there's plenty of evidence. Plenty of evidence exists in AV Forum's podcast going back a number of years to back that one up. Not a lot going on at the cinema because of Infinity War's coming out. Everybody else seems to be avoiding releasing anything.
Well, there's a thing.
Wisely, I would have said.
Yeah. The film that you mentioned that Rampage was competing against, is that out in the UK?
Yes. And I've got to say, I'm quite keen to see that because the concept is it's a sort of dystopian future where there are these monsters roaming the earth and they're attracted by sound. So you can't make any noise or you'll attract the monsters. And for large parts of the film, there's this, the sound design is vital because it's never actually, you're trying to be quiet, but obviously there's the tiniest noises and everything like this. It sounds like a really interesting concept. And apparently it's very well executed by John Krasinski, who's not, I think he's his first film as a director, but he played Jim Halpert in the American version of The Office. He's married to Emily Blunt, lucky him. She's also in it as well with him. So they're starring in it together. And like I say, he made it from like $17 million, but it's already made over $150 million in the US, worldwide. So it's doing really good box office. In America, it's going toe-to-toe with Rampage for the number one spot. So
Scary as hell, that.
It's apparently it's quite scary, and I'm quite keen to see it.
Yeah, and it's called
A Quiet Place. But yeah, that's out at the moment, which is worth checking out. But obviously, all the major releases are waiting for Avengers to get out of the way, and then after that, you've got Deadpool 2, which I just saw the most recent trailer for and looked really good fun.
Yeah,
and obviously Solo, and then after that, Jurassic World: Fallen Kingdom. And I've got to say, the most recent trailer for that makes it look a lot more interesting than the previous two trailers did.
It does. I was a bit worried about it. I thought it was just one story about how this island's going to explode, but it looks like there's a lot more going on than that. So
yeah, I'm quite keen on that now. Actually, it's really piqued my interest again. So it's some good. I mean, a lot of interesting stuff from a personal perspective, at least. A lot of movies I really want to see coming out over the next couple of months. So at least my car will get a good spanking, if nothing else.
Well, there you go. Some weird innuendo in there as well.
Especially when you're talking about The Rock. Spanking. Right. TV-wise, Lost in Space came out last week on Netflix. It's another one of these only on Netflix series. I had my doubts about this one, I have to say, because they have tried to reboot it in the past, and the last reboot I can remember was probably about 98 or 99, which was
a film in 98 with Matt LeBlanc.
Matt LeBlanc in it, and that was dire. That was really not good. Really was not good. So, it's one of these things. It's either got to swim or sink, basically, on how good the acting is, how good the effects are, how good the story is. I'm 5 episodes in. I don't know about anybody else here, but I've managed to get 5 episodes in this week, mostly on an Optoma projector, which is in at the minute, but also on this Sony TV just to see what the HDR is like. Really suits a big screen viewing. Absolutely looks gorgeous. Cinematography is really, really nice. Effects are well done for a TV series as well. I quite like the plot devices so far. I'm not going to spoil it for people. It really should be spoiler-free, but I like a lot of the plot devices. Some of the dialogue is a bit jarring in places, I would say. Not sure about some of the bad guys. Are the bad guys? Not really sure about that. But I've got to say, overall, acting, effects, cinematography, story, it's got me hooked. I'm going to get through the next five episodes. There's only 10 episodes altogether. I'm going to get through the next five this week, get it finished, and see what I think at the end. Because I think at the minute it's a bit of a slow burner because it's putting all the pieces in place.
Yeah, it's laying all the groundwork, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. That's what it's doing. And obviously I expect some twists and turns as we get towards the season finale. And then obviously there's going to be a big cliffhanger at the end to get us hooked for season two, I have no doubt. But yeah, I am enjoying it at the moment, and if I was to score it right now, I'd probably score it about an 8 out of 10, I think.
Yeah, I'd be the same, I think. I'm like you, I'm only 5 episodes in, so I'm halfway. I obviously, if you're familiar with Lost in Space, the original series, it's a different take, same basic premise, but a very different take on it. The setup's slightly different. It's not the family, though. Obviously, it's about the Robertson family, father, mother, two daughters and a son. That's exactly the same. The villain is again, Dr. Smith, although they've changed the gender, Dr. Smith this time. I'm not totally sold on that character at the moment, just in terms of their motivations. It's very different from the motivations of the original villain. So I don't know if I'm totally sold on that yet. But like you say, it looks superb, looks absolutely stunning. The effects are top draw. And I'm enjoying it so far. I'll stick through to the end and see how it goes. I definitely think that their series have been much, much better than their films have been to date. And this is another good example of a solid sort of 10-hour miniseries, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
It's really a decent pace as well, because I think sometimes you get to the mid-season and it drops off, especially if it's like a 20-parter or whatever, a 24-parter. You have filler, basically. There hasn't been any filler yet with this. It's been nice and slick, and the pace has been good to keep things moving along. And like I say, mid-season now, so it hasn't lulled in any way. There's still groundwork being set, but it looks like it's going to pay off, or hopefully it will pay off as we get further in. Anybody else seen it?
Not yet. It's on my list, but I'm racing against time with the current thing that's about to go off now, TV.
What's that?
Gamora.
Oh, right. Yeah, I'm just trying to quickly finish rewatching season one of Westworld because season two kicks off on Monday.
Looking forward to that. And I've just finished the 4K Blu-rays last week or the week before, so it's still fresh in my mind. I can't wait to get into that. The only thing is having to wait every week for another episode. You can't really binge it, can you? And the thing with Now TV is you can't wait a few weeks either because they disappear pretty quickly as well. So. Yeah, that's the only thing. But yeah, Lost in Space, season one. If you haven't started watching it yet, then I think it gets the thumbs up from us here. Certainly up to mid-season point anyway. Really quite good. Are we going to touch on the controversial point, Steve, about one of the daughters? You know, it's fairly obvious that she's ginger.
The father's ginger as well, isn't he? We've got a touch ginger in there. Yeah, I initially thought, like, why is one of the daughters black and the other kids are white and the parents are white? Seemed a bit strange, but they do explain that in episode 5, actually.
Yeah.
And they think, okay, right, I get it. So that's actually adds an interesting dynamic to it, I thought. Initially, I thought it was like, I've just been politically correct. But actually now I think it's quite a clever plot device to add a different dynamic to the family that wasn't there before. So actually, I think it might be quite interesting.
Interesting. Right. Okay, so what else do we need to talk about? Discs coming out this week, so 4K and Blu-ray. What do we have?
Not a massive amount this week, but we've got Pitch Perfect 3. So if you're a fan of the Bellas, and I know for some reason Kaz is. He loves these films. Basically, they're an a cappella group, and it's a comedy.
That's a good singing.
I've never seen them, but they're very popular. From what I've read, quite funny. And as you say, some really good singing in it too.
There's a decent lightness of touch to them.
Oh, you have seen them, yeah?
My wife has seen bits and bobs of them. I have noted them on in the background. And I quite like Anna Kendrick. She's usefully self-deprecating. Yeah. So, that's all good. Freakishly small mind.
So that's out on Blu-ray and Ultra HD Blu-ray, if that is your preference this week. Also out this week, incredibly, 40-year, so to celebrate its 40th anniversary, Grease is getting a new Blu-ray and a new 4K Blu-ray release.
Can I
It was at the cinema last night. My wife and all her friends went to see it.
Yeah, for a single it's had a cinema release as well.
God, I'm glad I wasn't there.
Well, you know what? I'm actually quite tempted to go and get this on disc.
I like Grease. I saw it at the cinema in 78 and with my sister. And we used to have the album and we played it all the time. And all the songs were in the charts in the summer of 78. And I enjoy it. I think it's the really funny thing, though, is that I watched it again quite recently because my wife is into it. And I bought the Blu-ray for her. And we watched it, and she obviously hadn't seen it on the big screen since 1978, and we were really enjoying it. But I thought, you know what, there's some quite rude bits in this film. And I remember when I was a kid, we saw it at cinema, then we saw it again on TV in, I think, about 82 when it was broadcast on television, and I watched it with my sister and my grandmother. And I remember when my father got back that evening, he'd been out, and my grandma said, oh, that film was a bit rude. At one point, a girl thinks she's pregnant because the guy's French letter broke. And I remember sitting there thinking, what the hell is a French letter? What is she on about? All that stuff had gone straight over my head, I have to say, at that point in my life. But looking back now, it is actually quite rude.
There's swearing in Grease Lightning as well, isn't
there? Yep, there is. But the songs are great, and the choreography is really good. And although the cast are pretty old for the parts they're playing, I think Stockard Channing was 32. She's playing 17-year-old. But anyway, it is a classic. Yeah, I wouldn't mind. I'd be interested to see it on a big screen, actually.
You ever see Grease 2?
There's a bit of controversy about Grease 2, because when it came out, it was absolutely, it was trashed as being terrible and awful.
It was.
Apparently, a lot of people are saying now, actually, you know what? Better songs, better story. Grease 2 might be an undiscovered gem.
I remain to be convinced.
Go and discover it, though.
Okay.
Anyway, so, 40 years, blimey. And then also coming out this week on Blu-ray is Killjoys Season 3. I've never seen Killjoys, but it looks like it might be an interesting show. The concept at least appeals to me as like space-bound bounty hunters. But that's out on Blu-ray as well this week.
Okay, and UHD Blu-ray announcements. Hopefully nothing else for me is what I'm going to say.
Unfortunately, quite a bit for me, depending on whether you think it's worth getting or not. But announced for May, Red Sparrow. The Jennifer Lawrence film, sort of spy thriller. I didn't get a chance to see that cinema, and I do quite fancy it. So
I got snowed in. Didn't get to see that.
That's why I didn't get to see it either. I actually had tickets booked and couldn't get to the cinema, annoyingly. So I might pick that up. Also coming out, this is in the States specifically, because there's slightly different release or program for these films in terms of where they come out. So Annihilation's coming out on 4K Blu-ray in America, because obviously you've got a cinematic release there. That's going to be a 4K disc, 4K DI, Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos. So if you liked Annihilation, you might want to pick that up. Also, The Hurricane Heist, which again, got a strange release in this country. I think it was shown at the cinema, but also was available to download immediately on Sky. That's obviously, it's all in the title, really. It's a heist movie set during a hurricane. That's getting a disc release in the States. And Paramount have lined up all the Mission Impossible films for June. That's going to tie in with the release of the new Mission Impossible movie, which comes out at the same time.
How many movies are there, Steve?
I think there's five coming out on disc.
So the missions weren't that impossible then, if there's five movies, really.
And also announced for June, Pacific Rim Uprising. And then it looks like 24th of July, or around about then, will be Ready Player One coming out on disc.
In July, you say?
Yeah, it's the 24th of July.
You know, that's probably going to be one of the most freeze-framed disc releases ever.
Just looking for things in the background.
Just looking for... Because I noticed a couple in the second viewing. One of them was Back to the Future, the Mayor, his poster for re-election.
Oh, yeah.
It was in one of the backgrounds. So I've noticed quite a few bits and pieces the second time around. I think it'll be quite interesting watching that on disc, just to see how many things you can actually pick out. Because a lot of the gaming stuff just went over my head, to be honest. Even stuff were getting laughs while I was in the cinema this time around, and I was like, don't get that reference. Sorry. But for every one of those, there's another six or seven which are, stuff that if you were a child of the 80s, you definitely pick up. So it was interesting seeing it a second time. I think the disc should look absolutely stunning.
I definitely think it will. And like I said, I think when we saw the film a couple of weeks ago, I would seriously think about buying the 3D Blu-ray as well. I think that would look really good. There was lots of scenes in that film where depth was a big issue, and I just thought that might look really cool in 3D. So that could be quite expensive.
Yeah, you're going to spend an absolute fortune this month and next, by the looks of things.
Yeah.
I can hold off a little bit.
Although I haven't really bought much in the last few months because there's not been much out. So.
Yeah, so it all balances itself out.
Yeah,
it
will really balance out over the course of a year. Yeah, there's still a lot of money.
So, yeah, like I say, Greece, I probably haven't seen that since high school, actually. It was one of those things that I did see it when it came out. This was back in the days of VHS and Betamax and all the rest of it. So, and there wasn't a hell of a lot of films out that you could get, but Grease definitely did the rounds. And for some reason, it was popular. So I'm not sure if I want to get it on disc or not. There's that nostalgia thing, but there's also the bit that actually it'll probably look pretty ropey now. Interesting. I might see that. But obviously, musicals have never really been, or certainly the perception is, never really been popular with the home cinema bunch like us. So do we have our favourite musicals?
Is South stuff... Park.
That's true.
No question. South Park, Bigger, Longer and Uncut is one of the cleverest, catchiest and most intrinsically brilliant musicals of the last 40 years.
It's different, Ed, I'll give it that. And
No. Right. Some of the songs are the lyrics from the actual... And that when they do the medley, I mean, there are proper West End and full-on Hollywood marketed as musicals which don't have anything as good as that medley in them. It's just sensational. Trey Parker and Matt Stone are bloody excellent musicians. They really are. It is phenomenal. I mean, and Team America in its own unique style isn't too far behind. I mean, that's got some very, very good songs in it as well.
I'll give you that. I mean, Montage is probably one of the best songs that they've done. I've got to say, I do like South Park. I like the opening number. I like a few of them in there. I don't know if it's the best musical in the last 40 years, though. I think that's pushing it slightly.
But I don't like any of the other ones. They're all plot shit. So,
okay.
The Blues Brothers count?
Yes, I suppose.
That's a good one. Where musicals end and films making heavy use of external music begins, and Blues Brothers sits somewhere in that.
It depends on how you define musical. If a musical is defined as a film where people break into song in unrealistic situations.
Yeah, I'm not big on that.
then that's quite musical. Whereas, like, say, for example, Cabaret. I mean, Cabaret is a musical, but the music takes place on stage in the club, which is, I guess, you know, so you could say it's a drama with music as well. Plus, also, the bit when the Hitler Youth stand up and sing "Tomorrow Belongs to Me" is actually spine chilling in that film. I think it's brilliant. So I love Cabaret. I love Singing in the Rain because it's got brilliant songs, brilliant choreography, but it's also really, really, really funny about the early days of sound, the talkies in the movies.
Never seen it.
If you haven't seen it, I cannot recommend it highly enough. I've got a soft spot for My Fair Lady, mostly because I like Audrey Hepburn, although she isn't doing the singing, obviously, in the film. And she doesn't really convince as a shop girl, or as a flower girl, but she does, as obviously later, as a lady. But it looks lovely, beautifully shot. And I don't know what other musicals...
I mean, does Dumbo count? Because that's got some of the finest songs going in it. I mean, Dumbo is arguably my favourite Disney film.
Well, The Jungle Book, then, would be one of my contenders for...
Wizard of Oz?
Any film where there are songs in the...
Sound of Music?
Plot.
I've changed my mind.
It's definitely a musical.
I've got to say, recently, I mean, I haven't seen Singing in the Rain. I'd like to see it. I will put some time aside and see it at some point, I think. But the other musicals from round about that era, you know, the MGM musicals and so on, I have seen clips and bits and pieces of. I don't think I've ever sat and actually sat through a whole musical from that era, which is probably shame on me. There probably are some absolute crackers in there. So that's maybe an area to look at. But if you're talking about modern musicals and so on, I did like La La Land.
Yep.
I really enjoyed Moulin Rouge. Moulin Rouge.
God, I would sooner eat this laptop than watch that infernal bastard film again. It's like the rest of society has some collective psychosis with that. It's shit.
I don't like it either.
Utterly shit.
Okay.
And you're all wrong.
You've got your opinion, Ed. That's fine. That's fine.
It's up there with Jerry Maguire. There's incomprehensible films that people like.
Yeah, okay. I loved it. Moulin Rouge, absolutely loved it. So it's superb. But that's probably the only two that really sort of stick for me. unless you go in animated routes and so on with the Disney Pixar and that kind of thing with the musical numbers in them and so on. But then they're supposed to have that. They're not. I mean, a Disney film has to have songs in it, really.
Moana. I loved Moana as if you're talking about sort of musical animated.
It's better than Frozen, wasn't it?
Yes.
Well, I think the songs are better. Moana, yeah. And not just because The Rock sings "You're Welcome" in it, which is obviously the high point, but it's a fun movie and it's got some cracking songs in it. It's interesting how the musical was one of the biggest, one of the most popular types of movie in the sort of 40s, 50s, and then in the 60s, that it sort of reached its peak, I guess, with the Sound of Music. And then there was a gigantic fall off in the 70s after some massive, massive flops like Star with Julie Andrews, which was like her and Robert Wise again, thinking, oh, I'm going to come back with another musical, and it bombed beyond belief. And the musical died off for a long time, and it wasn't until, I'm trying to think when the musical made a comeback, really, but I think it probably was in the noughties, when you sort of saw things like Moulin Rouge and Chicago, suddenly musicals were back in fashion. But for a long time, they were dirty, a bit like westerns, you know, they just didn't get made. And now it seems like every other thing on the West End is a musical, isn't it? Usually based upon random existing group of songs that people know about. So, like, I think
my family are obsessed with The Greatest Showman. Absolutely obsessed.
That's a musical that's, I mean, obviously, if you look at it from the point of view of historical accuracy, it's absolute bullshit.
I watched the Honest
Trailer on that one. Very unpleasant individual, as far as I can work out. But it's been hugely popular, and the songs are quite catchy, I have to say.
That's all I hear.
This is me coming out of the room in the house.
So Ed is a music lover. I'm surprised that you've only come out with South Park so far. There must be musicals or certainly songs from musicals that you like.
Sort of. I mean, I sort of agree with Steve that Moana had some crackers in it, but it's a weird one. I don't like people singing in films, really. It just takes you out of... And one of the reasons why South Park works is because it's absurd from the very start. And Dumbo, you know, they're animals. They shouldn't be talking, so singing I can handle. This is a weird sticking point. But in terms of film and music, I'd rather listen to a great film soundtrack, be it a decent orchestral score or one of the Tarantino films where it's music picked for the event, or Baby Driver or things like that. Actual musicals are not my tempo, so that's where I am on it as a music person.
Okay.
So yeah, it's sort of keeping the two disciplines separate. Oh, good, my son's found the horn.
Well, I think that's about it for this week's podcast. The weather's too nice outside for us to sit and talk any longer. Steve's got pink G&Ts to go and have, and the rest of us can sit and look out the window. My thanks to Steve Withers.
Where are you going? To flog your log?
Mark Hodgkinson.
Beauty school sure wasn't as I thought it would be.
Can you speak up?
Sorry, beauty school sure wasn't as I thought. I can't say it. I literally can't say it. These painkillers have kicked in. Beauty. No.
Just play Purple Haze for him, Phil.
Yeah. You're cruising for a bruising. There you go.
There you go. And Ed Selly.
I don't look at it as dropping out. I look at it as a very strategic career move.
Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter and Facebook, bookmark avforums.com for latest reviews, news and videos. And of course, leave us a 5-star rating on iTunes, but only if you enjoyed the show. I'm Phil Hinton. Thank you very much for listening. And we'll see you again next week.